Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Tongue is about to books. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Everyone, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
I'd expect that from you, Cincinnati.
It's so great to be back.
Yeah. We were just here 7 months ago, and you all came back. You're really nice. Thank you.
I did a French tuck today just for you all.
Just for Cincinnati.
You all love the French tuck.
Tan France is here, right?
Welcome to...
I assume.
Tan is usually at our shows.
I assume.
Welcome to the very first show of the 20 Funny Fill Your Life with Laughter and Love tour. As you can see, we have tasteful stage decor.
And are those considered primitives?
They're primitives. It's a primitive look.
Those are those stores.
Yeah, the stores.
That's
yeah,
what they're called. In case people are like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, we are well accustomed to primitives.
We live in West Virginia.
Yeah.
That's what
primitive
are
in
called.
More ways than one.
No.
Come on. I'm just having some fun. I live there. Shut up.
It's okay.
You can begin the podcast now. You know what we're talking about. I don't.
Well, I know, but you had a whole thing you were going to say.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the thing.
No, you were going to say...
You know, Cincinnati...
We took a break.
There's
we
a,
took a break from touring. It's not... doesn't show.
Yeah. Listen, Cincinnati, you got a lot of very impressive firsts.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in medicine. We were looking like, what's a good medical topic for first heart-lung machine,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
From Cincinnati. A lot of the first heart transplant. First Jewish hospital,
mm-hmm,
right here, Cincinnati. But also Cincinnati, y'all get nasty. So if you can guess which one we're going to speak on tonight, that's correct. It is the third. It is the final one.
It's not Geta again. We're going to leave that alone.
No.
Not we another. Did that last time.
Yeah.
No, I started looking into the history of Cincinnati and what medically was, you know, relevant, what was interesting, what would you want to know? And I kept stumbling upon something that we've covered on the show before, but in greater depth, which is that Cincinnati has a rich history of grave robbing and body snatching.
Like a rich history. You shouldn't cheer yet. You should wait for the end. Nasty. Do you see what I'm saying? Grave robbing. We love it. Two things from us are chili and grave robbing. That's Cincinnati.
I title my outlines for our shows just something for me to like know what I'm searching for in my own Google Docs, like not for anybody else. So I usually don't share the titles, but the title of this one was so good I felt like I had to say it before I started the show. So we're going to talk about William Cunningham and the Ghouls of Cincinnati, which is a great band if your name is William Cunningham.
Sure.
So if you're here, William Cunningham, you can have that. That's yours.
Also, put the bodies back. Nasty. And go and be dead again, because you came back to life, I'm assuming.
For a good bit of history, and we've talked about this before, but you weren't allowed to dissect cadavers the way we do now in medical schools to learn about anatomy, to understand the human body so that you could, you know, like, take care of it and try to keep other human bodies still alive. And that was a huge problem for medical schools, because how are you supposed to do the right thing for somebody if you have no idea what, you know, what their gushy bits are inside there? You're just kind of guessing. You're looking at pictures. Some of them are wrong, some of them are right. And there were very limited opportunities, even when it was legal to dissect somebody. It was usually that somebody committed a crime that was considered so bad in the eyes of the law that they would not only sentence you to death, but they would sentence you to dissection. And so there were very rare opportunities where the court system was like, here you go. This is one you can have.
They're really bad. So bad. The big problem with that is all their hearts are three sizes too small. So that's going to give the doctors a misunderstanding of the size of the heart.
And in those cases...
Do you remember when the Grinch murdered those people? That was weird. That's what I was implying, I guess.
And then, I mean, I guess what you're saying is then after that he was put to death and dissected by medical student... Medical student who's...
I guess, yeah, they would be the Who's doing the dissection of the Grinch.
That's a very
There's not
dark.
Other Grinches around, so I guess, yes, Sid, if you want to get dark, the Who's down in Whoville would have to carve the roast beef. If you'll carve the roast beast, if you'll forgive the expression.
Okay, there were no Grinches involved in this story originally.
They are now.
So, if you were lucky enough to be at a school where a dissection, where an actual human, you know, cadaver was, and you could witness a dissection, it usually was pretty crowded. If you were a young medical student, you weren't going to get the opportunity to actually do anything. They might be done in a big theater where, like, the bosses got to do stuff, and you just got to kind of crowd around and, like, try to take notes. So it was not great for medical education. So it put physicians and people training to become physicians in this really bad situation where it's not that... I mean, like, they knew where there were bodies. They knew where they were. And they knew how to get them. It just wasn't legal. And so at this point in history, doctors got a really bad rap, and especially medical students, for going and robbing fresh graves for cadavers so that they could do their anatomical dissections and learn about the human body. So, like, they had a good goal, but a very bad way of going about it. And so for a while, like, it really was the doctors and students themselves who were doing this, which really added to, like, the mistrust of the public. Like, doctors were not popular, not that, like, we're super popular now, but they really weren't popular at that point, because it's like, no, I know what you do. I don't want you touching me. You rob graves. And so they were like, well, we need to outsource. We don't want to be doing this ourselves, because it's not a great look. We need people who are willing to do this for a price. And that is where the resurrection men, or resurrectionists, as they were known, came into the picture. And these were just people who were like, yeah, I mean, you pay me the right amount and I'll go dig up a fresh grave.
Sure,
I'll
no
bring
problem.
A body. Yeah, no questions asked. And, like, it became a very lucrative profession and a very involved profession, where if you were going to get a body, you had to get one that was pretty newly, you know, dead, for it to still be dissectable and learn things. And you had to have, like, a method of doing it really quickly. And you would even do things, like, if you were going to set your price, there were different prices based on how much learning you might get from that cadaver. So they would, like, send people to the funerals as, like, fake mourners.
Nice.
To, like, case the joint and gather info. They would even, like, send, like, supposed grieving widows to, like, the poorhouses to claim, like, John Doe's, that nobody knew who they were, and be like, that's definitely my husband. And so it was a very...
Whoa, that's intense.
It was a very involved profession. And they could charge, in their dollars, up to $80 for a cadaver, which would be, like, about $2,000 now. So, I mean, You could make a lot of money doing this.
Hey, hold on. Quick timeout. Quick pause.
Now, at this point, I'm standing up from the table to remove some very precious Fill Your Life with Laughter and Love signs that our dear friend Paul had lovingly placed in the front of the stage and obscured the view of some of our beloved audience members. So I'm standing up to rectify the situation.
Few people's view of the goods were being obscured. Get your full ticket price, my friends. My beautiful friends I'm beholding for the first time now that our signage has moved. Paul, I was right about the signs, Paul. Write it down in your notebook. My friend Justin was, dear diary, my friend Justin was right. The signs blocked their view. But luckily, Justin saved my show. What a hero. Sorry, Sid. Go on. Now that the view is no longer obscured by our signage, continue your tale in your full visual splendor for the first row.
Thanks.
You are, of course, welcome.
So you may be wondering, where were the cops? Why didn't anybody...
Yes, where were the cops when Paul said the signs were okay there, Sydney? The man should be in prison. We were all wondering it.
Where also were the cops when all the grave robbing was happening? And the problem is that there was this kind of this conflict among like the judicial system, the court system, and the legal system. Like, we kind of understand why the medical schools need bodies. Like, we get it. We understand what they're trying to do. It's not nefarious. They need to, you know, understand how the human body works, and we get it. But at the same time, this is illegal, and this is not the way you should go about this. This is wrong. So the penalties were actually not that bad. It was just like a small fine if you got caught, which it seems like it should be way worse. And they kind of, you know, just didn't, like, pay attention to it intentionally, because it just wasn't, it was like, I don't want to mess with this. It's not worth our time and trouble, and it might be okay. So a lot of families took to trying to protect their loved ones on their own. And, like, it could be as simple as just, like, I'm just going to stay graveside for the first few weeks to protect the grave. Two, there was actually a patent at the time on a coffin torpedo, which was, like, a spring-loaded bomb in the coffin that, like, was loaded once you shut the lid. And so if anybody tried to open it, it would just, like, you know, explode.
That's actually my favorite scene in Home Alone. It's weird that they stole it for that.
But these deterrents weren't working. There was too much money in the game, and people wanted that money. And so by the time we get to, like, the mid-1800s into the late 1800s, there were tons and tons of people, like resurrectionists, in this line of work. And it only grew as there were more medical schools. And by the mid-1800s, Cincinnati had 5 established, like, certified, actual, real-deal medical schools. And then about 8 more sort of loosey-goosey kind of, like...
Like fun ones.
We'll take you in, and we'll get you a degree eventually if you have enough money. But, like, anyway, there was a huge demand in Cincinnati specifically because of so many medical students, so many physicians in training. We need bodies to dissect, and so you needed a resurrection man who could supply. And that's where we meet William Cunningham. The history of William Cunningham is a little... We're not sure. We think he was born sometime around 1807 in Ireland, and then he came over to the U.S. at some point. But we really don't know what he was up to until he started his, what would make him infamous, his grave robbing. He was noted to be kind of like a tough, surly guy. He liked to drink whiskey. Him and his wife, Mary, even would kind of work together on these jobs. She was also noted to be like a tough lady who liked whiskey. That was the main thing. As you read, like, what did people know about him? They're like, they were really tough. They liked whiskey.
So if you've always imagined grave robbers as genteel, sorry to burst your bubble.
When he was described in 1870, people talked about he had a ponderous yet gaunt frame, a villainous bald head.
Come on.
A strong, marked face with age and crime, a canine mouth, from the corners of which slowly trickle the generous saliva, impregnated with the juices of nicotine. He had one leg that was broken and had been shot and was, like, full of buckshot, and so he always kind of, like, limped on the one leg, which made it all impressive that he was very good at his job. He moved very quickly. And when you would ask him, as he was asked in his census, like, what do you do for a job? He would tell people, I drive an express wagon.
Yeah.
Which is kind of true.
True. It didn't say what's in it.
Oh, yeah. It had to be express once you'd loaded your cargo. He was said to have exhumed up to 100 bodies a year.
Whoa.
In the height of his career. He was very
productive. I bet there were individual people that weren't putting that many into the ground in a given year.
And especially, this was a lot considering that there was only a specific time of the year that you would do this. You didn't want to be in this business during the summer. So it was really just like October and November. That was it. Those were the time, and that was actually the time of the year when medical schools would be like, now we will start the dissection lesson.
The thermostat is dropping, so it's time to get some bodies.
Coincidentally, this is when we do dissection. And he only charged about $30 as opposed to like the high-end 80, so I guess he also offered you a deal?
Sure. Well, he's doing quantity. That's the profits are right there.
The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth.
Right now, Sydney and I are directing a production of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory here for the summer. And that's almost every night. So almost every night we got rehearsals, we have work, we have kids. But we would like to eat stuff that doesn't make us feel terrible. You know what I mean? Stuff that makes our bodies feel good. Not
exactly.
You know, fast food can get a little bit like, ooh, rough. You know what I mean?
Not every night,
certainly. But Factor makes that a lot easier. These are fresh, never frozen meals made by real chefs and sent to your home that are ready to eat in just 2 minutes. And they've got a weekly menu, ton of different options, whatever way you want to eat. You want to pack in some more protein, you have flexitarian, whatever your eating style is, they got menus to suit it. Right now, you can head to factormeals.com/sawbones50 and use code sawbones50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code sawbones50 at factormeals.com/sawbones50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. If you want to get a tree and you want to get it fast and you don't want to have to leave your house to make it happen, and you want a huge selection, and then you want a partner in that tree buying process, somebody that's going to help you pick the exact right plant for your climate, tell you all the pro tips, and continue to support you. This sounds like a fantasy, I know, but no, it's not.
Specifically like my fantasy.
Yes.
I love plants.
I love plants, but Sydney, Fast Growing Trees makes that a reality. I went to Fast Growing Trees. I told them our zip code. They told me, here's some apple trees that you can plant. And they told me when to plant them, where to plant them, how to plant them, all the steps. They made it really super easy. And when I had a question about it, I called them and they answered the question. And you know what? I'll be danged if those trees aren't out there growing leaves, not apples. It's a little early for that, listener, but there's leaves. That's a good sign in the biz, right, Sid?
There's leaves and flowers.
Leaves and flowers.
Flowers mean apples will come.
Apples will come and the plants will come if you order them in 1 to 2 days from Fast Growing Trees. Right now, they got the best deals online, up to half off on select plants. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off when using the code Sawbones at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code Sawbones at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code Sawbones. Offer is valid for a limited time. Tell them we sent you.
He was very bold in his grave robbing. And this, of course, resulted in a lot of stories, you know, myths, legends, true, somewhat true, that have arisen about William Cunningham, who was also known. At the time, resurrectionists were also called ghouls. So you may also just be called a ghoul. Well, he was known as the ghoul. If you said the ghoul, you only met one guy. He also went by the name Old Man Dead.
Good.
And that they would use that. Actually, it was very common at the time in Cincinnati, like if you were raising young children and they were misbehaving.
Yikes.
To raise the specter of Old Man Dead. Like, you better watch out or Old Man Dead will get you. It's a gruesome time. And then sometimes they would just call him Old Cunny.
No. Don't. No. Cincinnati.
One of the stories, and I'll tell you a few stories about him. One of the stories that I liked is that at one point he was in the cemetery mid-grave robbing expedition with some, he always had like some people helping him out. He didn't work completely alone. He was the boss, but he always had some guys working with him. But he was in the middle of robbing a grave when the authorities showed up and were like, come on, we're taking you in. You can't do this.
Come on.
Like, we gotcha. This is a pain, but we got to take you in. And all of everybody else, like, absconded. They all, like, took off, except for Cunningham. And he was like, okay, boys, you got me. Yeah, I get it. On our way to jail, though, do you want a drink? You want to... There's, like, a pub right there. Do you want to stop for a quick drink before we go? And the cops were like, no, okay, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we do.
We're bad cops, sure.
So they all went to the bar, and they had a few drinks and, you know, relaxed. And after a while, they were like, we really don't want to bother taking you in. Will you just promise us, like, don't do this again? Just promise. Please, Bill. Please, Old Man Dead. Don't do this
anymore.
Like,
you got it. I'm going to learn carpentry.
And whatever he said convinced them that he had turned over a new leaf and was not going to do this anymore. And so they said goodbye. They let him go on his way. Of course, he returned immediately back to the graveyard, finished his work.
He went like round the block.
And sold a body. there was another tale where Cunningham was, he got a body and he was delivering it to one of the medical schools, and he had to like go through the city through like busy streets. And while it was nighttime, there were still a lot of people out and about, you know, partying, having a good time. And so what he did was he dressed the body in some new clothes and put it up in the wagon with him, like with his arm around him.
The real Weekend at Bernie's?
Yes. He completely weekend at Bernie'd the guy.
Another Cincinnati first.
So he got him all upright, got his shoes on him and everything, and they started riding down the street, and every time the guy would kind of slump over or fall, he'd straighten him up, and he would yell something like, sit up, this is the last time, by God, I'll ever take you home when you get drunk. You ought to be ashamed of yourself with a wife and children to support. And just yell this stuff, and everybody just thought, like, oh, look at that nice friend.
You know, he may rob graves professionally, but he's a sweet person.
There is another story about Cunningham where so the easiest kind of business to be in if you're a resurrectionist was, you know, local. Like, shop local. And that was how he usually did things to just the medical schools in town. But because he was so good at what he did, he got a reputation that expanded beyond Cincinnati. And so physicians from outside the area who needed to train medical students or who needed to learn something themselves, it was kind of like a self-taught era, would reach out to him and be like, can you somehow get me a cadaver? Is that possible? And apparently he said, yeah, sure, maybe. Okay, I'll figure it out. So at one point, he went to American Express, where you could ship things at the time. It wasn't a credit card. And he had a big box that was marked glass, handle with care. And he brought the box and addressed it to a Dr. Hardy in Leavenworth, Kansas. And he said, now I want you to take this box, collect on delivery. I'm going to need $30 when they get it. And apparently after he left, the employee at American Express was like, something feels wrong. That was Old Man Dead. And I don't feel good about any of this.
And we haven't invented glass yet.
So he opened the box. Yeah. Do you want to know what's in it?
Is it a body, Sid?
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
Do you want to know what's in the box? So there was a cadaver in the box.
Yeah, we all saw that coming.
So the way they handled this...
Although I imagine by the time it got there, that someone would be like, you know what? This is pretty stinky glass. Something's wrong.
So the way they handled this is the person who opened the box sent one of, like, their porters out and was like, go talk to this guy and tell him, like, we know there's a body. And tell him we don't want to deal with it. And that's exactly... So this porter shows up, and Cunningham's, like, out in his barn, and he goes and finds him, and he's like, hey, we opened your box. It's not glass. And Cunningham's just like, did you call the cops, man? Really? And they're like, no, don't worry. We're not going to do that. We just don't want to deal with it. So will you come get it, please? And he was like, fine, fine. And then he tells them, but you know, I've already shipped 100 people this way.
Whoa!
So it really isn't that big of a deal, but fine. Just please don't call the cops. And apparently at the time, they're like, no problem. He was known as someone who was not to be crossed, not to be messed with. He was like a tough guy. And some of the stories that, again, you know, how this kind of mythology spreads, was it true or not? But he once, when some medical students had kind of cheated him out of some money that he felt he was due, he gave them a cadaver that had died of smallpox.
Woo!
So he's not somebody to be trifled with. And then sometimes, and this was not just Cunningham, this was actually very common for the day, he would sell a cadaver to a medical school and then wait until nightfall and go steal it back and go sell it to another medical school and then wait until nightfall and steal it back again. And
what are they going to do, tell the cops?
This was a very common problem that medical schools ran into, where they would like have to buy the same body like 4 or 5 times.
He'd draw a little mustache on it with Sharpie.
Now Cunningham eventually met his end. I don't think he had a very healthy lifestyle. It was not a violent end. But I don't think he took very good care of himself, because he died somewhere between the ages of 50 and 65. Nobody's really sure. But it was in 1871, we know that, because before he died, his last act was to preemptively sell himself.
Mm. Oh, that goes down smooth.
To the Medical College of Ohio. And so upon his death, his wife got $50 because he had already donated his body, or sold his body, I should say, ahead of time. And Mary, as I said, his wife, was a tough customer, too. She said, I know he negotiated 50, but I'm going to need 55. And she got it. And like all the bodies he resurrected, he was also dissected by young medical students to further their anatomical knowledge. But they didn't just bury him at the end, unlike all the other cadavers. As a tribute, I guess, depending on what you think the word tribute means, as a tribute to him, his skeleton was displayed at the medical college after the dissection was done, and it was like displayed on wires, like propped into a sitting position in a cabinet, like in a glass cabinet. As you walked in, you could see there was the skeleton of William Cunningham with a pipe between his teeth and a big wooden spade in his hand.
Nice. Very cool.
Because that's how he spent his life. I don't think he's still there. Uh, As you may imagine, this practice of resurrecting bodies eventually came to an end. The most high-profile crime associated with this actually occurred in Cincinnati, and it was when the body of a congressman from Ohio, John Scott Harrison, who was in fact the son of President William Henry Harrison, was stolen after he died. It's actually, the story is that while his family was at his funeral, they noticed that the grave of a friend of their family, an Augustus Devon, the grave had been robbed. And so after the funeral, they went about getting search warrants so that they could go look for this friend, because they knew he was at, everybody knew that, that these bodies were at medical schools. And you can read lots of stories of families like searching medical schools and like cops searching for medical school. They knew that the medical students had them. And so they get warrants to go search for Augustus Devon. And as they're searching for this other man, in the meantime, the congressman's body is stolen. And that's who they discover. And because this gets these shocking headlines and it's such a high-profile crime, the penalties for grave robbing become a lot worse at this point. And there are a lot of riots. We've talked about this on the show before. Like doctors, like riots at medical schools and like to go chase down doctors like in the streets.
I want to take a moment for poor Augustus Devon, though. I doubt that fool ever had a thought, if history remembers me for anything. I hope that my body is stolen and that helps them find another cooler body. And that is why my name shall be repeated in the year of our Lord 2020, Anno Domini.
They did find him eventually.
Oh, cool. That's very chill for him. Excellent.
I'm just saying.
Could you have, next time, if we ever do this exact episode again, could you learn, like, one hobby that this guy had or something? Just fill out the bio a little bit.
I can do that. Augustus Devon. I'm sure he did something else. But this, because of this, it also...
Augustus Devon the Fourth just walked out. I'm sorry! We didn't know.
He may still be in Cincinnati. I don't know. Maybe the family. But... because of this, people also realize that, one, like, this is terrible, and we need to put a stop to it. Like, this is not okay. And also, we do need a way, if we're going to, like, you know, as doctors started to point out, if you're going to sue me when I don't know how to do medicine, can you at least help me know how to do medicine? Which is fair. We did need to teach people, like, what was inside the human body, because we had a lot of stuff wrong in the past.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
And so they also found pathways where you could legally donate your body to science, and then, you know, obviously nowadays that's how we do it. There is no more grave robbing. I can tell you that I would not have gone to medical school if I thought this was part of the job description, and I hope other doctors would say the same.
You would be a grave robber.
That's what I'm saying. I wouldn't have gone to medical school.
No, you'd be a grave robber instead, I mean. That seems like it would be up your, a good use of your skill set. Cincinnati, thank you so much, beautiful Taft Theater, for having us here. As always, thank you to Paul Saborin. Thank you to the taxpayers for the use of Salt Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Thanks to Max from Fun Network as having us part of their podcasting family. And thank you to you for being here or listening later after the fact. We appreciate it. So until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.